ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to episode 26 of the Mosby Learning Podcast. We have a brief hiatus there, a bit of a suspension, really. We might get into that later. But thank you for sticking around and keeping our RSS feed in your, in your pod catcher of choice. My name is Dan Hurt, and I'm calling in from Mississauga, Ontario.
Hey, I'm Betty Danowitz, and I'm from the If You Ask Betty, and I'm calling in from Detroit, Michigan, and everything you've heard about Detroit is true.
Ty Roberts, I'm calling in from Rocky View County, Alberta.
There you go. We are scattered across North America. Thank you both for hanging out with me tonight. I really do appreciate that. Betty, thank you. We're kind of new friends, really. We started chatting around, I don't know, like 2 months ago, it seems. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, about 2 months ago, and fast friends ever since. Similar to myself and Mr. Roberts, me and Ty, though. However, where would you say we met, Ty?
Can I say the name of the company?
Oh, it's previously not been named. Yes, it is an office supply company, though.
An office supply company, yeah. That shall not be named. What was that, 2002-ish?
About 2002, yeah. So, gosh, we're going on 20 years. I don't know.
I didn't know Betty was from Detroit. That's cool.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I walked around Rocky View County today with my Tigers hat on, so I always get weird looks for that.
Yep. Well, anybody would.
Yep. Well, unless it was maybe like Tom Selleck. I bet he could pull it off.
He could pull it off. You're right. That's for sure.
That's right. That's right. That's half the mustache, though.
That's true.
All right. That's so we find ourselves here. We are. This is we can't not talk about COVID. So let's just get out of the way. We're mid. I hope we're mid COVID TBD. And I'll tell you, when I start looking around for things to talk about in L&D, it's like there is one thing to talk about, and that's it. It's like how to take your in-class content offline or e-learning. And it's just it's nonstop. That's all it is. And that's, you know, that's okay. But there's other things to talk about. So I scoured the ends of the internet. We found a couple things to discuss here. Anything that we talk about tonight, hopefully, we'll have a link at mosby.ca/026. And we have, of course, an email address. You can reach us, mosbylearning@gmail.com. And we've got people that we have a whole team. We have a whole team of people just watching that inbox, waiting for somebody to eventually send us an email.
Are we mid-COVID?
I'm hoping. I've been optimistically saying
excellent
mid-COVID.
News, Dan. Thank you.
No, I
thought we were dipping our toe in.
Yeah, my money's on 20-25%. That's my money.
Okay, that sounds good too, actually.
Yeah.
But. Well, we'll see. I mean, we don't know. This could wrap itself up really quickly.
It could also last to 2021.
It could also, man, I've been talking to a few people about what the long-term social implications of this are. Mm-hmm. Like, I was talking with somebody, I think I was talking about my wife, about the sales of attachable bidet spigots for a regular toilet are just out of control right now. So is all of a sudden, is the world just going to completely adopt bidets because every jackass bought a pickup truckload of toilet paper? Is that what's happening?
I like
I have a super soaker in every bathroom now. So
yeah, right.
Spritz soaker.
I like you call them all jackasses and use the word toilet paper in the same sentence. I thought that was fantastic.
So I'll say I'm operating in a whole different plane. That's
for sure.
That's how it goes. Okay. So yeah, because of that, that seems to be just overrunning everybody's world, this COVID business. And it certainly is coloring the world, but it's not the entire world.
I heard someone say today that, are we trying to play the ball or are we letting the ball play us? And if I get one more COVID email, that's pretty much the determining factor in whether I think I'm being played by the ball or not, because that's all I hear about.
Well, I'm not sure I follow.
Well, you know, are we controlling what's happening? Or are we just letting the virus run the show? You know,
I think the answer is yes.
Yes.
I think
I think it's a little bit of both. Yeah.
It reminds me of Homer Simpson being in the batting cage when Bart Simpson just overloads it with coins and it just pummels him. It's like, that's the ball that's playing us right now. Like, we're going to do our best. We're just going to keep our helmet on and see how beat up we get.
Mm-hmm. Have you been out publicly too often in the last week or no?
Me? Yeah. Well, we got a little small kind of little crescent that we're on. So we cruise that quite a bit, but I've been working from home all week. So really I haven't traveled much. I think one trip to a grocery store, that's been about it.
Can I tell you a little grocery store story?
I guess. Yeah.
I just I went to the grocery store.
It wouldn't be the first grocery store story on the Mosby Learning Podcast, so that's fine. This fits in well, yeah.
Forget it, then. No. I was in the parking lot of the grocery store today just to pick up a couple of things. I walked. There's a woman putting her cart away, and I've been trying to be nicer to people because it's this weird. The social distancing thing is weirding me out. Everyone looks kind of worried, and you know, so I normally wouldn't say anything, but I said, was it all right in there? How did it go? And she goes, and she pulled her mask down from her face, and she goes, everyone's looking at each other like they're afraid of each other. No one talks or makes eye contact. And she goes, you're the first person that has looked at me since I got here. And I walked in there, and it's on one hand, it's good because everybody's, you know, listening to the advice they're being given. And on the other hand, it's there is a definite fear in people's eyes looking at each other.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in the States, nobody is listening to what you're supposed to be doing.
Oh,
that's strange.
Well, okay. So now maybe it's not nobody. I'm listening.
It's everybody else. It's everybody the other else. 335 billion people.
My grocery store story is I went to Target. There was still a ridiculous amount of people there, most of which were just somewhat nonchalant. When I would go down the aisle, people were just like, you know, they just like let you pass them. Like, okay, well, the aisle's not 6 feet apart, but that's fine. But I did see one guy walking around with this massive camouflage bandana across his face. He had on a hat. He was completely covered head to toe. And he had like gloves on top of gloves. And his shoes were covered with those shoe cover things that realtors wear when they come in your house to show it. And
wait, do you think he was a realtor?
No, I think he just wanted toilet paper, which, by the way, they didn't have any at Target. Yeah, so, it's interesting because it's like you see both sides of the coin, two people walking around just touching everything. And then this other guy that looks like, you know, he's in a video game about the end of times. So
I was going to say he probably had a flamethrower bolted to the roof of his minivan, too.
Totally possible.
It was a Tesla brand flamethrower. Yes.
And of course, just FYI, my face was itching the entire time I was in that.
See, so you know how you're not supposed to touch your face. So what I'll do is I'll pick up like a box of crackers and I'll use that to touch my face, to scratch my face.
That's probably
and then I put
worse
it back
than
on
your
shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Perfect.
It's a perfect solution, really. Okay. So we do have some potentially training related things to talk about. And then a couple kind of articles. One just that I wanted to, there's a couple that I have in here just for kicks because I want to have some snide comment about it. But and then after that, then we are going to talk about a little augmented reality. And this is something that both my co-hosts here, Ty and Betty, have dipped their toe into those waters. And I'm hoping for an illuminating conversation about all things AR. But
that means he wants us to explain it to him because he doesn't
dumb
understand.
Yeah. Dumb it down.
All
okay.
Right. Well, I'll talk until you tell me to stop. That's okay.
That's my concern, really. Okay. Were there any articles that you guys saw that I had kind of put in a little collection that you thought were interesting or something you might want to touch on?
Well, I liked the one from Gulf News, the first one you had on there.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm hoping I would say that. E-learning works and we all must embrace it.
Yes.
So you seem like you're itching to talk about this. Did you have something specific?
Well, so here's why it hit me, you know, so I saw, I mean, I just basically search for articles and stuff about training and learning, that sort of stuff. And this one found its way to the top very easily. But the more I looked at it, the more I thought, this is weird. And then moments before we started recording, I'm looking at it again and I just wrote 1984 on the top of it, because this is an opinion article. This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is from, I don't have the website in front of me, but it is Golf News, Golf News, not G-O-L-F.
Because thank goodness you and I have the same opinion on this. I thought I was going to sound like a moron.
No, it's GULFnews.com. Golf.
United Arab Emirates, right?
There you go. Yeah, the UAE. And I mean, the gist, I'll give you the gist of the article is that the UAE is perfect when it comes to children learning online. Now, the fun parts for me was just the fact that, and there's been a couple articles about learning that we've got from, what the hell was that website? It was something posted, Forbes. There's been a few Forbes articles that we brought up that are like, not paid content, but partnership content, that sort of stuff. So, you know, we try to bring a little bit of, not concern, but just look at things through sometimes maybe a touch of a skeptical lens, and you'll see some exciting stuff. And so here we have, the title is E-Learning Works, and We All Must Embrace It.
Well, if you have one skeptical bone in your body, it should be ringing like mad reading through this thing.
It's an opinion article that has no byline. It's the opinion of Golf News, which seems to be I don't know, but they seem to be in agreeance with everything that His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President, Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai. So he's a serious fella, not to be trifled with, but this just seems comical top to bottom. And the point of it is just blah, blah, blah. Kids got to learn online because of COVID. So who gives a shit?
I wrote a little note here.
What do you got? What do you got?
I just sniped some interesting one-liners. Must embrace it. Near perfect.
Yep.
UAE swift and decisive action.
Yep.
This is my favorite. For the sake of our future. And you're right. There is no hint of it being an opinion piece other than reading it.
Right.
And,
right.
So it's pretty wild.
Yeah. Oh, man. Betty, anything else you want to add to that piece of propaganda?
I mean, I thought it was interesting how they were throwing around some statistics that may or may not be true. Specifically, nearly 900 million children in 120 countries have been affected by the closures of school. I don't really know how we would count that. Like, I'm not
900 million.
900 million. So that's like almost a billion. I mean, I don't think
we got 7 billion.
I don't think Excel can.
Might be from the same computer model that says half of us will be dead in 6 months.
It might be. It might be. Which, you know, that leads me to my whole, I think COVID is really just because Thanos actually did get to snap his fingers. It's just a slow burn. But anyways, you might want to cut that out. People won't like that.
No, see, we talked about editing earlier. Just so you guys know, me and Betty talked about editing, and there's almost nothing gets pulled out of this. There have been a few things. I'll bleep the word and I'll bleep moist.
What's the first word?
It was
okay, and moist. Yeah.
And
you probably shouldn't use those two words together in the same sentence.
Only in the context of what gets bleeped on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Otherwise, we don't.
Just got awkward in here. Let's move on.
Is damp okay?
Damp and dank are both fine.
All right.
I don't know when I'll have
occasion to use it later, but
yeah.
Hey, we used when we did our podcast.
Yes.
And it was entirely inappropriate. God, I have to keep writing it on time codes now. Yeah, and it was entirely inappropriate then, and it's entirely inappropriate now.
Did you hear him, Ty? He was like, as soon as I said that word, he goes, how dare you?
No, it's one of those traits of Dan's that I forget and I'm always reminded of when I accidentally use the word, which is every 8 to 9 months or so, it'll come up. But
what word was that again?
It's part of his brand. Yeah.
Okay, good.
That's not part of my brand. I got to keep writing this down.
I wanted to say one last thing about this Golf News article.
Let's do it. I'm a subscriber now.
Incredible e-learning is, though. You and I were just talking a week ago privately about my looking into e-learning. And anecdotally, but I can't find anyone who will personally endorse it as a learning tool, only as a tool to get accredited, you know? It's very difficult for me because I've been looking into it and I've been reaching out to people whose opinion I trust about what that might look like for me. And I'm having a very difficult time finding anyone who will endorse even the e-learning or the education online that they completed. Yeah. I cannot get anyone to sign on and tell me, yeah, it was great from front to back. I really felt like I got a lot out of it, other than the accreditation at the end. But.
So I think there's a line that we could draw between e-learning and distance learning when it comes to technology, because a lot of times when we think of e-learning, it's the drag and drop these things to the right spot. It's the read this and click these things to reveal. But a lot of times, and I took a distance learning, an online course about technical writing in January, didn't care for it. And it was terrible. It was through that Blackboard. I don't even know what the hell it's called. Blackboard. Betty, does that sound familiar?
That
Blackboard?
Sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible. It's a giant piece of garbage. But I don't,
wow. You should tell
know.
Us how you really feel about that. Don't hold back, Dan. Wow.
it's just, it was the most, and I'm sure every Blackboard instance is, so before I get sued, I'm sure every Blackboard instance is different, and it's basically customized to the will of the, you know, of the institution. But man, I'll tell you, I had a hell of a time finding my way through any menu, trying to understand what was what. We had to answer questions that, There were questions that were, I don't know what they called them, maybe like a weekly assignment where you had to complete this. It was a quiz. That's what it was. The first quiz I did, though, it said it's due in like September 19th. And I thought, well, this makes no sense. So I'm not doing it. And then like in the last 4 days, the prof sends me an email. He's like, hey, did you know you haven't done any of these things? I'm like, well, it said September 19th. So anyways, nothing's clear. Nothing's arranged comfortably there. And I think it's a tough sell. I think it's a tough sell. And that kind of walks down the path of training that happens at the same time, synchronous versus asynchronous, which is happening at all different times, you know.
Now, 2 weeks from now, we're not going to have somebody from that company on this podcast as a guest, are we?
And I get to swallow my pride and eat my words.
Is this the scam we're running here?
It's how I get attention in the world.
You pull out the Tesla flamethrower and short somebody.
Oh man. No, anyways, didn't care for it. Betty, have you seen any sort of distance learning platforms that you've been impressed by?
No.
But there you go.
But it's mostly because I haven't seen a whole lot of them. And that was one thing I thought was interesting about this Gulf News, not only that it read like a propo from the Hunger Games, but because that's exactly what I was thinking the whole time I was reading it, but mm-hmm. because they were talking about all distance learning as e-learning. So at first I was like, okay, well, obviously they don't know what they're talking about. Because yeah. It's not all the same. It's not all e-learning. It is electronic learning, kind of, but that's not the same thing. So I know that there are quite a few platforms out there that I have been told and talked to about, but nothing I've experienced myself. So I can neither confirm nor deny whether or not they're any good.
But we're all on the same page about Blackboard, right?
I mean, only based on your experience. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. Why not? Take my word for it, I guess.
I guess.
All right. So that's e-learning works, and we all must embrace it. What's next? We've got how to keep your kids busy. Does anybody want to talk about that? Does anybody care about that? How to keep your kids busy and learning while schools are closed?
Well, that seems especially relevant. Sure. It's relevant to my life. I'll tell you that.
I have a feeling we're all in different spaces with this. So mm-hmm. Dan has little baby kids, 5 and 1.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 5 and 1.
Ty, what do you have?
I have a 1 7-year-old son.
We have a 7-year-old.
And a dog. And a dog.
And a dog. And I have
right, but I don't care what she learns.
I have a 12-year-old and a 17-year-old. So we are literally from one end of the spectrum to the other. So so the majority of this article didn't really apply to me, but I will say there was one particular part that I thought was interesting, and that was when he was talking about how the best way that children learn is by sitting and having conversations with their parents. Did you read that too, or did I?
I sure did. I felt that a lot of this article, for me, there were some useful resources sort of toward the bottom. But a lot of times when I find myself, and especially lately, my eyes caught by something like this, because there's been a lot of this type of thing out there, it shocks me how much of it feels like it should be common sense.
Yes.
I shouldn't have to read an article to tell me to talk to my child. I mean, that's a pretty open. I mean, if you have a few kids and you're just learning now that you maybe should talk to them, you probably need more than just an article from the.
Yeah, that's a head scratcher right there.
From the folks at CTV.
Yeah. So the thing that spoke to me about that, though, like was. Of course, it seems like it's common sense because that was the first thought I had. But then the more I thought about it, This is what I'm always preaching about when we're training people, right? When we're bringing people in for learning and development opportunities, is that the real learning happens when we make them talk to each other. Now, the introverts hate me for that. They absolutely hate me for that. Like 9 times out of 10, when I start a class or a session, and like within the first 5 minutes, I make them talk to each other. Somebody gives me the side eye or looks at me and says, "Introverts don't like this." And I'm like, "Sucks to suck." Like this is what you have to do. Like, sorry. So, sorry, that was not very nice, but it is what I say. So, but that's where the learning happens. So one of the classroom sessions I do is crucial conversations. And the greatest part of crucial conversations is not me getting up there and telling you the model and telling you my examples, although people love it. But the part that's awesome is when I'm like, okay, here's what I need you to do. I need you to partner up and talk about a time when blah, blah, blah. Right. And so like, it's when they have to talk to each other. And so often we design training where they don't talk to each other. And he's not wrong. That is when the learning happens.
He's not wrong. And so I actually had a moment like that. And I think I've brought it up on the podcast before, but it had to do when I was at a conference and I sat next to somebody that or at the same table of somebody who's from that company that shall not be named. And I was particularly pissed because I interviewed with this person and I didn't hear back from that company for 5 weeks. I fit the bill of what was in the print in the description of the job and I didn't hear back. And I had previously worked there and I didn't hear back from them for 5 weeks. That's and I was super pissed about this. And like half the time I'm there, I'm like, man, I just want to tell this guy off. I'm really pissed about this. And I didn't. And then there was an exercise that the keynote speaker, which was the guy that wrote, dang, I feel bad about this. He wrote a book about creating mindful leaders. And he had us do an exercise where it's like, you know, if you really knew me and then you say a thing and then he said, okay. And you had to speak to that person for like 15 seconds. If you really knew me, and then 15 seconds worth of stuff. And then he said, okay, now we're going to do that again. Same person. And now you have to talk for 2 minutes.
Oh, it's a long time.
And it was like, oh, and the other person wasn't allowed to interrupt in any way, shape or form. And you already got the superficial stuff out of the way. So it was definitely a learning experience. And I did learn about him and that even though that their onboarding and hiring process may be lacking, he has an interesting life and all those things. So I don't know.
How was that crow? Did that taste good or?
it was okay. It was free. So, and I got a free book out of it. So the crow wasn't terrible.
Did either of you receive anything from your respective school systems in the last few days?
About the just parenting and stuff?
Teaching at home, like
just some generic. Yeah, they include, well, it was for the entire school board. So, I mean, it's stuff that not really appropriate for a 5-year-old, you know, it's talk about TED Talks and shit, which is like, okay, that's great. But I just need to keep the kid busy for 8 hours a day, you know?
I'm fairly satisfied with what we're getting here. Yeah. It's pretty comprehensive and you can tell they're working extremely hard at it. I didn't like I also got a profile for my son. In the Google system so they just signed our kids up into Google's ecosystem for our learning, which I just received this today and I know nothing about it. I have to look into it a little deeper, but I like the idea of Google now is going to have access to my child's
They probably already
performance
do.
Performance at school. Yeah.
They probably already do. Yeah. Our kids are, they both are communicating with their teachers online. They both are already in sort of the Google system because at their school, they do a lot with that. They submit assignments online and things like that. So they were kind of halfway there.
I was surprised to see it because we have our own systems. Our own My Blueprints is one of them. The other one that we're on is a rockyview.ab.ca site. So that's proprietary. And I've heard no mention of Google whatsoever. But the second this happened, my child has a Google profile. So I thought that was interesting that they turned to that.
I assume there's like limited information on his profile.
I've his full name is in there, and then we'll be submitting performance information in there, which means they will have it. So, you know, it's just interesting that I need to dive deeper into it, but it's just interesting that they moved immediately to that the second this happened, because it's not what I expected to see. I sort of expected a little more of a, and I am getting direct contact from his teachers, but I sort of expected that to be it. And then maybe some just stuff built by them. Just talk to your children about this. Let us know what they think about. And I expected it to be a little more improvised and a little less, we just pulled in a structured system that somebody else made and entered your children into that system. I didn't expect them to do that, but they did it. So
that's part of that crib to Silicon Valley pipeline they got going.
Yeah. It shocked me, but we'll see how it goes.
That's a bullet train right there.
It is. Yeah. It's like, it's better than the NBA or anything like that. Just by the time they're 15, like, let's get the sharp kids over here. Come on. All right. What else? We got six things to consider when transitioning to virtual training. This is a TD.org. We're trying to bring on a regular basis now at least one article that's not from golfnews.com.
Yeah, so that's a good call.
Was this anything you guys wanted to talk about? Betty, any thoughts on this one?
So, I mean, visually, I thought it was kind of busy, but yeah, that's not really what you mean. I'm sure you mean, do I want to talk about the content of the infographic?
Well, now that's interesting, because why couldn't we address that? Because this is put out by TD.org, and this is a group of people that you would expect to understand infographics.
That is the first thing I wrote when I took notes on this as well. I said the exact same thing.
Yeah, I think all of the content in it is accurate, correct, good stuff. I think it probably could have been two. It could have been, you know, standing up your virtual training and then, you know, what to do next. Because I think that, you know, one through four seems to be about actually training, and five and six are like what happens later. But, you know, a lot of times that's just style.
I have an idea here. I just had a realization that the reason that it's as busy as it is, and it's because it's not just from TD.org. It's posted there, but it's from ShapiroNegotiations.com is who created it. And it was created to fit a single letter page. So an infographic, you want a little more scrolling. And you know, it's so easy to bitch about things, ladies and gentlemen. We know this. Maybe we've got our claws out a touch, but relax. It's a podcast.
I have some data for you, Dan.
No one's listening.
It's 2,448 pixels wide, that image.
Wow.
It sure is, which is in the name of the document, I think.
And it is crammed into... a third the width of my, you know, 1920 pixel wide monitor. So that's not how you scale stuff if you want people to read it in an article.
I suppose.
No, but
so.
You know what, that's, I think this is a great example of how right now in this time we are curating the heck out of everything. Yeah. Right? So like, just like you said, this really isn't from TD. They're just posting it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when basically when whoever it was that created this, like, they got the news that they were going to have to shut down. And then 5 minutes later, they started creating this.
Yeah.
And they stayed up all night. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so yeah. We have to be nice to them because I think they did capture everything considering they probably hadn't slept in 24 hours in order to get it done so quickly.
So if we have the ability to criticize this, ladies and gentlemen, you have the ability to criticize us and the Mosby Learning podcast. Send your criticisms to mosbylearning@gmail.com and we'll be happy to read them on air. So just a highlight here, moving to virtual training, customize step one live. So, you know, customize your things, make it a live experience. And this kind of goes to what we were talking about earlier, Ty, with the offline or online education, that sort of stuff. They're saying, you know, make it a more of a webinar type event as opposed to a access these things at any time. And recorded webinars, they don't perform the same way because with a real webinar, there's the allure of it being live. Mm-hmm. There's the maybe there's a bit of a spectacle to it. Like, so something could go wrong, who knows? But you do have usually the ability to ask questions as well. So there's
For the
There's
folks
something
at home who
may
be at closer to my level of knowledge in this field than you two, what I was pulling from this when I was reading it, just on the whole, is, for example, in the spatial learning point, and I kind of wanted to bring this to AR or mixed reality because I think that's one of the strengths of that kind of a platform, is there seems to be in the writing, if you read between the lines, this fear that the tools that they're providing may be something you need to help them understand how to use. And we can bring it into AR later, but I think that's one of the strengths of AR is how intuitive it is when you are in that environment. You have your two hands and you have pretend physical objects in front of you. And it's like having a Rubik's cube in front of your face. Mm. You know, instinctively, you know how to use it, but that's not always the case when you're playing with a tool for learning that someone's created on a computer screen. And I don't know, I just thought maybe you had, I noticed it in the writing of the spatial learning point that it just sounded like there was a bit of fear there to coach them on how to use the tools that you're providing them. And the thing about tools in general is, you know, if you're an adult, you pick up a tool and the best tools, you know what they're used for generally right when you pick them up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a fork
that makes sense.
Brush your hair.
Right.
You're just saying that because you're a ginger. Is there a ginger connection here? Is that
might be.
It
might be.
I know the Little Mermaid. It's a dinglehopper, right?
It's a dinglehopper. That's right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's not flat as a pipe.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Yeah, so I think the use of intuitive or tools should be intuitive to use. And a lot of times I think that e-learning things like Blackboard, maybe they're not that intuitive, you know, and that is a big problem for sure.
I think back to my time, you know, working for various companies over the years and going through their training programs as a trainee, right? There were plenty of times I can remember where something was sort of maybe hastily written and it's using a tool that I don't see in the back end and you're trying to figure out, well, what do I drag this over here? No, it doesn't work. I have to click it. And then I have to click the empty spot and, you know, everything's a little bit different. And I just, you know, I know we're not talking about AR yet, but that was this particular article. I see a lot of the insight as to why I think mixed reality and AR is such a powerful tool for training, is because everybody who knows, and I was with you, I think the first time you tried virtual reality, not phone virtual reality, and how intuitive it was. You, and I think I even commented about how how quickly you picked it up, it was a video game, full disclosure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're not somebody who plays video games very often.
No, not a ton, yeah.
But very quickly, you became very good at this one type of video game.
Was it Beat Saber?
No.
No. That might have done me in.
Just a simple shooting gallery or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
And
There were the two games that we did. There was the what'd you call it? Work or office jobs.
Oh, right. Yeah.
There was that. And then we did that for like a half an hour. There you go. Job simulator. And
yeah,
then we
which
jumped
is a
right
good in. One for training. I think everyone in your field should play job simulator. Isn't it interesting? Because it's very simple. But it gives you an insight as to what can be done with those tools in a serious way. Because of how intuitive it is. You're in a place, you have two hands. The new technology is incredible what they can do. I mean, it's they can map your hands from the headset, and so you can actually see virtual hands in the space that you're in, and they're one-to-one with your real hands.
Creepy, super creepy.
Yeah. It's it uses the same technology, or similar technology, I should never say the same, that something like a face unlock uses. On an Apple iPhone, they map your face in 3D as a layer of security. They're not just taking a picture of your face. There's a little IR projector in the front of the phone. And if you've ever seen like them doing special effects in Marvel movies or something where they put multiple little points on people's faces.
Dots, yeah.
Yeah, it's making a dot map on your face in infrared. And it's viewing both the photo of your face and the 3D dot map of your face to securely open your phone. And that's why they're so confident in the security of it. But that technology is built into mixed reality headsets, but forward facing, so that anything you hold in front of your eyes can be mapped in 3D by the device, and you can create a virtual copy of it. And I mean, it's obviously, you can tell it's a topic that you can talk forever about, but when you really
I'm getting that vibe.
Sorry, it's just one of those. It's exciting. It's exciting. It's not a topic I usually get excited about, but but I mean, you can imagine the training implications of that. Of you know.
Yeah. Well, so it's the training implications, and we've talked about this on Mosby a bunch of times before. It's the training implications, but where are the appropriate spots for those to be? You know, because there's a lot of and you know, unless there's anything else you guys want to touch on there. Did you guys want to touch on the other articles or anything else in there, or can we just jump in here?
We can just jump in. I mean, the only thing was that one article talks about innovation, but that's what we're going to be talking about. So
it kind of does.
Yeah. So I'm cool.
Yeah.
With that.
So let's kind of weave them back and forth if we want to. But that's, you know, we've talked a lot about. So we're moving on, ladies and gentlemen. We've talked a lot about in the past how VR and AR are very exciting buzzwords. They're very sexy ideas right now. People are all giddy about them. But I think there's an over giddiness about them in some instances, because people think, oh, it's the new thing, just like micro, it's got to be for everything. No, it doesn't have to be for everything. It's got to be for some things. And if it does those things right, then it's perfect. It's got to be the right thing for the right job. So where are, and Betty, maybe we'll turn this over to you for a minute or two and can just ask you some questions, because that's one of the reasons one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, Mosby, was to talk a little bit about AR, because you've got some experience with it. And as far as just accessibility for maybe a training individual that doesn't have a lot of experience in it, knowing what you know, how difficult is it to access, like how to get your hands on it?
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Well, if I had to,
I don't understand those.
If I were to have to, if there was an appropriate way for me to implement AR in my training program, but I didn't know how to do it, but somebody said, no, you got the right thing for it. You just got to get some AR in there. How difficult is that going to be for me, a lay trainer, if you will, to kind of put those pieces together?
Gotcha. Okay. So what you should know first and foremost is I am a designer, not a developer. And continue to say, if you can build a PowerPoint slide, you can create augmented reality. Now, I say that because I'm talking about simple applications of augmented reality, using it as an engagement tool, as a way to boost interest, boost engagement, and harness the natural dopamine flow that comes from pulling out your own personal device, which, by the way, you're in love with, and then using it to scan or access augmented reality content, and then watch that content and learn about something on that personal device that you are in love with. So that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Now, if you're talking about something like what you see in like Minority Report, where he's like looking at stuff and like moving things around in the air with his hands. No. Okay, so two things. Number one, that doesn't really exist. And number two, even if it did, L&D could never afford it. So it depends on sort of the type of augmented reality you're talking about. My recommendation is that people start simple. And when I say people, I mean learning and development teams. I mean, you want to change a culture. You want to change the way that your learning and development team is viewed, the way that learning is done at your organization. It has to start simple. You can't come in, you know, with $50,000 price tags on one VR experience. You have to come in slow, steady, and simple. And does that answer your question, Dan?
Well, it does. And so I like the idea that if I can do a PowerPoint, because I can do a bitchin' PowerPoint presentation, if I can do that, I can do some level of AR. So you're saying use people's, like a BYOD, bring your own device.
Absolutely.
for the initial entry into that. So, okay, let's say we do that. And you've created things like this. And I think you've mentioned for the insurance industry, you've done something like this. Is that what you said?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep. For insurance operations, which is claims processing, which is quite possibly the most boring content ever to teach in life.
Well, so, okay. How did you find an AR access point for that? Like, where did you say, ooh, this is the thing? Or you like, okay, they need to jazz it up a little bit. How did you put AR and that claims piece together?
So what I did was I looked for pieces of information that we said the same way every single time. Okay. So if I know that we always say this, we always talk about this particular thing the same way every time, then I could take that and create an AR experience so that, number one, it equalizes it. So every person from now until we stop using this technology will get the same experience, the same content. It's, you know, for sure it's everybody's getting it. Whether they take it in or not is up to them. But that's true if you're standing in front of the classroom telling them that, or if they're accessing it on their phone. So I looked for something like that. It has to be small, because think about how long are you willing to hold your arms up to scan, you know, so 90 to 120 seconds is max. And what happened was, when I first started looking at stuff, I was like, oh, well, we can't do this and we can't do that, because, you know, it's insurance, it's part of the financial industry. So they're afraid of the cloud, terrified of the cloud, and augmented reality is stored in the cloud. And, but you know what? And then I stopped and I said, wait a minute. I'm not going to think about what I can't do. What can I do? And that list, a list of what I could do, is like three times longer than what I couldn't do. So using mostly non-proprietary public information, I was able to create experiences that would be part of an overall blended solution. So augmented reality is typically not in and of itself a solution. It's a part of a more blended approach. It might have classroom elements. There might be video. It could be webinars. It could be an ebook that has augmented reality in it. All of those things are possible. But for me, the way that I've used it, it's an engagement piece that you sort of sprinkle through your content.
So this content, was it a live session or was it like a click next e-learning? What kind of content was it?
I have used it in live sessions. I have used it in electronic communication. I've used it in virtual classes.
Okay, so you're almost using it in the same way that we could sprinkle in a video here and there to change up the medium, to keep people's interest and to kind of engage them a little bit more, right?
Yes. Okay. Similarly, yep.
So I don't know what sort of secrets you want to share, but like, what sort of software are you using to develop these things?
So I love Zapper.
Okay.
I'm using the word love. Only because two things. One, it's so simple.
And so I have the app pulled up, and I know that I said I was going to do this, and you're like, no, it's not that big of a deal. Because I have an If You Ask Betty sticker on my laptop.
You do.
And I have this Zapper app pulled up on my phone.
Okay. So you're going to zap it?
I'm going to zap. I just hold
this
it over.
This is an incredibly simple augmented reality. Yeah. I heard the little beep beep.
Yeah. I want to share this with you guys. And now I have a little business card.
Yep. It's got it. So what you're experiencing is an augmented reality business card.
Okay.
And then you see a little button
that says tap for contact information.
Yeah, so tap that.
I like that you're experiencing the video card. That is.
Okay. And then it goes through. And then it goes through to more stuff. My phone's in black and white mode too, so I'm probably not getting the full effect here.
Why would it be in black and white mode?
Because I don't know. Because I'm.
Odd.
Nerd.
You're very odd.
Then it says tap for downloadable contact.
Yep. Tap
and
that.
Then boom.
I only made that. It like that. I only did that so I could tell people to tap that.
That's exactly what I assumed.
Okay. So what you've just experienced is an augmented reality business card. It is absolutely like the simplest version of augmented reality. What I was able to do with our executives is create something similar to what you just experienced, only when you first launched it, it actually had a video of them saying, hello, my name is so-and-so. Thanks for, you know, doing business with us. If you need to reach me, you can tap the phone button, or if you wanted to send me an email, you can tap the email button, and it will either automate, when you tap it, it'll either call them or it will send them an email. I don't have a green screen, so I didn't do that, but for mine particularly, but for theirs, that's what we did. So it's just a very simple application.
That's cool. So you had what at the beginning of the session, you would have people download that app. And so now you're kind of banking on everybody having their device on them, right? Or having a smart device.
Right. And the thing is, like, we provided iPads in the event that somebody didn't want to use their device or didn't have their device.
Interesting. Okay.
At least for in-person stuff. Otherwise, we had them use their own device.
Far out. Okay, that's cool. So you and I, you know, I totally interrupted you. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to point out one thing, because you said, is it? I just want to make sure that we're not downplaying it too much, because you said it's kind of like we would use a video to sprinkle in and mix up concentration and engagement, the medium.
Yeah.
And that is true. But I will tell you this: watching a video on the screen up in front in a classroom or watching a video on your laptop does not have the same chemical reaction in your brain as when you pick up your own device and watch a video or have an experience that you have to interact with, even if that interaction
in the phase two where that'll small. Be the first that for most people that'll be the first time they see anything like that.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the first time you see something like that is
yep.
And if you get to be the person that shows
that
them that, that's a big plus for you, right?
Yep. You'll be their favorite. Which is my ultimate goal in life, is to be everyone's favorite. So cool.
You're working just very hard at that.
I am.
I love
I'm
it.
Working hard. Yep.
Okay. So it's not, it's more than a video. I'll give you that. That's I'm on board there. It's useful. So you just have them download the app, and this is just one platform that you can use to develop this in. So you, is there a development side of this, that Zapper app?
So the app is just to access the experience. You, okay. As a developer, you subscribe to ZapWorks, ZapWorks. And what's really great is that ZapWorks will give you 5 free experiences. So you can go out there. You could go out right now, Dan, sign up and start prototyping and building your own experiences so that you can kind of test it out and see what you think of it. And I would encourage you, if you're going to take augmented reality to your stakeholders, take prototypes with you, because talking about it and showing them two completely different impacts.
Yeah.
So you want to show them what you could actually do with it.
Well, you want to give them that dopamine hit, right?
That's what I'm talking about. See, I'm telling you what, someday I'll write a book called How to Get That Dopamine Hit.
You just call it Tap That.
Tap That. I love it. That's copyrighted.
Careful,
don't
you
steal
don't want
that.
Send them to the $4,000 headset too fast, though.
No, but he's right.
We keep looking for the bigger hit.
That's right. He's right. You got it. It's got to be a slow burn. You got to be slow.
All right. And the first one is free, I think. Or the first five are free.
Yeah, the first five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First five hits are free.
So is there, why do you think that people, more people haven't adopted this?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on that. One, people don't know about it. And even though you and I might be like, well, we hear this all the time, but you and I, and, you know, and maybe Ty, I don't know Ty that well, but like we're involved in the industry. There are so many other people, like it's only about 20% of the people in L&D are actually involved in the industry. The rest of them are in their corporations, in their businesses, heads down, doing their job, not developing, not learning anything.
Hmm.
Not looking for anything. I know, because I was that person for 15 years. Yeah, 15 years, it, heads down, doing my job.
I always find that interesting, you know, and I have friends that are like this too. I have friends that are not like this, of course, but friends that are like, oh, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what do you mean you're good?
No, yeah. No interest in growing at all. Yeah. So yeah. That's not one thing they don't know about it. Two, they're too afraid of it because they look at it and they think, oh, that must be expensive. Oh, that must, you know, oh, it's in the cloud. Nope. I'm not even going to talk to you about it because it's in the cloud. Mm-hmm. So they're not willing to investigate it. I'll tell you, I went to a local ATD Detroit event and we did a knowledge share in January, back when we were actually allowed to be in the same room with other people. And And basically it was like a round robin, like there was like six tables and you had 15 minute or 20 minute time slot. People sat down at your table. You talked as fast as you could for 20 minutes. Then they got up, 5 minute break. They moved to the next one, blah, blah, blah. Right. Mm-hmm. By the third round, I had double the capacity of my table, because then they were all leaning in and over each other, probably giving each other COVID, but that's fine. like just eager to hear and see what it was I was talking about, because they had never stopped to take the time. Most of them said, yeah, I've heard of AR, but I figured that that's, you know, that's too far away. But it's not. AR is here right now. Like it's literally on in your phone, in your pocket. If you have Snapchat, if you have a Target app, if you have a Wayfair app, if you have Amazon, you have AR in your pocket. So
have you tried on Google's version, Betty?
Yeah, Google's got cool stuff too.
It's thinking of the opportunity to use it when you're in real life and having the opportunity to use it. Sometimes those two things don't align. And my wife and I were in a restaurant with a foreign language menu the other day, and it just occurred to me, wait a minute, I think Google has something for this.
They sure do.
I didn't have the app installed. I downloaded it, and we waved it over the menu, and it was translated like a magic trick in front of our eyes.
Really?
Yeah, and it works quickly. It's beautiful, and it's it overlays it right over top of the menu in 3D, And you're like, wow. And the first thought you have is, why aren't more people doing this? And it's because sometimes those moments in real life are so quick that you don't make the connection to pull that app out. And I think that's the key thing they need to work on out there in the maybe the marketing world, to make more people aware of those tools are there.
And we're getting there. And I think that a lot of it is people like me, people like Johnny Hamilton, people like Debbie Richards, Destry Hildenbrand, who are willing to get out there and say, hey, have you actually seen this? Have you? I mean, because anytime I do a session on this at a conference, I'll say, who here knows what Snapchat is? And almost every hand goes up. Inevitably, there's somebody in there that, you know, won't admit that they know what Snapchat is, even though they snap every day. So that's fine. So, you know, and they know what it is. Well, Snapchat is augmented reality. And so you have to kind of help them understand how something like that, overlaying content, could be used in training, and how it could give them such an edge as far as creativity and innovation in their learning and development solutions.
Yeah. And I've used those filters before, and I guess I never really put the words together too. Not on Snapchat. I used them on
Facebook, Instagram.
Facebook. Yeah. Instagram probably was it. Yeah. But yeah, I've never considered that to be AR, but of course it is. Of course it is. Now it's so
Instagram
obvious.
Instagram doesn't care that you call it AR or not, right? They want you to call it Instagram.
Right.
So Snapchat wants you to call it Snapchat, and Google just makes things and doesn't tell anyone what to call them. And sometimes they just let them die in the wind.
And then it cancels them. Yeah.
Yeah. Just can't. Well, that didn't catch on.
Yeah.
So.
Bunch of jokers.
All right. So what, when you, I don't know, Tyne, if you have any questions at all about kind of Betty's experience with this, just jump in. But so it, when you're pitching these ideas to the stakeholders, so you have your thing prepared, you have a sample, a prototype ready to share with them. Do you tell them about it beforehand? You say, hey, I want to show you guys augmented reality. I'm going to set up some time for it. Or do you surprise them? How do you approach that?
Well, I usually pitch it as an innovative way to gain engagement in our blended learning solutions. And then when I show up, I show that to them. I can say the words augmented reality. I don't think they'll decline my appointment if I do that. But I also don't think they'll know what it is. I'll tell you, the first time I was ever asked about it, we had a senior leader who came to us and said, hey, what are you doing that's innovative? And we were like, well, I don't know. I mean, sometimes we bring donuts to class. Does that count? She's like, no. And she's like, well, try to find something that's innovative, maybe something like augmented reality. I literally went back to my desk and Googled that because I had absolutely no idea what that was. And I was like, oh, well, this is Snapchat. How am I going to use face filters to teach people how to process insurance claims? And so I had to like dig a little deeper and find more of those use cases. And then I went out and started experiencing it. Like if you go to any grocery store, we've already had our grocery store discussion, then you go down the wine aisle, you can find something called 19 Crimes Wine. Have you seen this before?
No, but I've heard you talk about it before.
I'm sure you have. Sorry about that. Well, no, I'm not really sorry.
Say it again. The Mosby audience probably hasn't heard it.
So 19 Crimes Wine. So you go down the aisle, you have to download an app called Living Wines. And then you basically open the app, you hold it in front of the bottle of wine. And on the label, there's a picture of a criminal from the early 1900s, early 20th century. And the picture comes to life and begins telling you their side of the story for the crime that they were in prison for. And the first time you do it, it's creepy because there's nothing happens. There's no sparkle. They just literally start moving.
That's incredible.
And
that would be,
well, I'm not sure, like that's 3D modeling. That's a much more advanced version of augmented reality. But if you can go out and experience that stuff, you can get ideas of what you could do based on what kind of content it is that you need to teach.
That's an interesting idea because the inspiration comes from absolutely anywhere, you know, and I've talked about kind of how I design some PowerPoint visuals and that sort of stuff. And I'm taking it from ads that I see on a TV while I'm in a coffee shop somewhere or like a bus billboard somewhere. It's just it can come from anywhere. So why not? Now, one of the questions that I have, though, is if you've got. So here you've given me two different scenarios tonight so far with Zapper and what, Living Wines? Is that what you said?
Yeah, Living Wines. It's just you can't build anything in Living Wines, but you have to use that to access it. Yes.
Sure. I guess what I'm saying is, and Ty, you've even brought up the Google thing and you brought up the idea of these fleeting moments in life when it's like, oh shit, if I had the right thing and if I knew it was there, I could do this, you know? So now it's...
The other big one I remember was not one of those moments. The only other one I can recall that blew me away was I ordered a brochure, a paper brochure for a luxury car.
An augmented paper brochure? I don't know.
Well,
I don't see
the
connection yet. Okay.
is download this app for a better experience with the brochure. And this was, if anyone cares, this was the Hyundai Genesis line of cars, which I think are rolling out in the U.S., fairly recently too. So the luxury arm of Hyundai. And so you download the app and when you use the phone camera and aimed it at the different pages of the brochure.
I think you're pronouncing Honda wrong, just by the way.
No, it's not Honda. Oh my gosh. Good Lord.
The brochure just came to life. There was 3D cars that you could spin around and
that's pretty cool.
You could open the doors and you could see it in different environments. You could change the color of your virtual car and get different angles. And it was very well rendered in 3D. So you could even sort of get an idea of how the light bounced off the paint. It was that good. And, it was, they, the goal there was to, you know, as with, I guess, any luxury brand, and we didn't end up buying the car, but it's a great car. It blew you away. It felt like this is another, you know, this is something special. And I think Betty's right to try and be in the forefront of, you know, people that supply that dopamine hit to people, because those people will be remembered. And if it does catch on, you know, it'll be a race to see who could one up everyone else. But.
And keep in mind that 3D modeling of that car, that's marketing, and marketing has money.
Yeah.
L&D doesn't. So it makes sense that there would be two different levels or multiple levels of which we would use this technology.
But that's only for now. I mean, at some point it's going to be, it's all just like, you know, not everybody had Articulate and everybody was using PowerPoint at one point. It's going to change, and eventually things are going to get cheaper, I'm sure. But I guess one of my concerns is because I'm a semi-Luddite, where I'm kind of anti-technology and reluctantly adopting certain levels of it. It sounds like I have to have a bunch of different apps on my phone's in black and white right now. but I have to have a bunch of different apps on my phone for all these opportunities to come up. And that sounds cumbersome to me. I don't know.
Yes and
no. Most people don't care as much as I hate that. Yeah. You know, I have as little apps on my phone as I possibly can get away with. Uh-huh. But my wife has 300 apps on her phone at once and doesn't care, right? And I think most people fall into that category.
Yeah, I would agree. I think right now there are different apps. There's kind of two different categories you're looking at. There's marker based AR, and then there's marker less AR. So marker based AR usually requires a specific app depending on, you know, what the marker is. So there's Zapper, there's Metaverse, there's Blipbar, there's Living Wines. Walmart has their own.
When you say a marker, it's picking up on a visual cue,
correct,
and that's how it recognizes,
correct,
it? Okay.
Now, markerless, you just use the camera on your phone. And right now, like that's – so a QR code, you use the camera on your phone, yeah, and basically it launches a website for you. Yep. With markerless AR, it launches content. So I think 7-Eleven, I don't remember if 7-Eleven used a marker or not, but 7-Eleven had this whole AR campaign inside their stores with Spider-Man. So you could actually play a game with Spider-Man in the store, and you would just open your camera on your phone and aim it at this display, and the game would come up, because it launched content that was someplace else that was markerless.
So I think they're doing that on Happy Meal boxes and that's everywhere. It's invisible to a lot of people who don't understand what it's talking about.
Correct.
Well, but it's for the earlier adopters. At least it still is kind of for the early adopters, you know? Yeah. One of the first times I think I remember that coming up, and I don't know if it was QR codes, or it was some sort of QR-like thing, was when the movie Ninth District, the one about South Africa with the aliens. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah. District 9. Yep.
District 9. Yep. Thank you. Correct. So yeah, that came out, and a lot of the ads had like a little character that was on the bottom that used that sort of thing. I think that was the case anyways. But it's, again, I think it's for the people that it's for. So it's for kind of the early adopters that maybe want to have
Blade Runner, right?
Blade Runner? What about it?
Well, everyone's seen Blade Runner, right? No,
not everybody.
This idea that every ad will engage you.
Oh, as an individual,
without you having to engage it first. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you know, when you see the cutting edge of this stuff now, which I would say is the mixed reality stuff, and you think about how long will that take to be cheap, and what will that look like in a form where, you know, no marketing is afraid to interrupt you if you don't feel like you're being interrupted, you know? So I just see opportunities for augmented reality and mixed reality to just sort of show up in your face as you're walking by something, just like a toy aisle when the babies start laughing at you when you're walking through it. It's
like in Back to the Future, when the Jaws shark comes up out of the movie theater and comes down and like he ducks because he thinks it's going to eat him.
Yeah, it's hardware-less mixed reality, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the price of augmented reality is relatively cheap right now, marker or not, or marker less, either one. It's the skill set that becomes an issue. So simple augmented reality, like I said, if you can build a PowerPoint slide, you can create augmented reality. When it comes to things that are more deeply interactive or have 3D modeling, you have to have the skill set to create that 3D stuff.
And if I could just interject there, that technology will be in your hand. In fact, a lot of the modern phones have the ability for you to create I would say 80% of the quality of a professional 3D model with using something like a phone by simply holding the object in front of the phone and rotating it around in 3D in good lighting. And a 3D model will be of the object you wanted to represent is now in your phone to use.
Where are you coming from on that?
That technology is out there now. And if you want to see the extreme high end of it now, I would point you to HoloLens from Microsoft because they've built. But I mean, you could download an app for your phone right now. I wish I had the name of it. I'm sorry. For anyone with a phone with a face unlocker to, like, if you typed 3D face, I don't want to recommend a specific app because I'm sure there are a lot out there that aren't something you want to download.
Yeah.
But you'll get the idea right away. If you rotate your face, or for any face unlocking feature, if you're rotating your face towards your camera to unlock your phone, it is creating a 3D model of your face that it's saving in its memory. And that technology can be used to create a 3D model of a cup or a, you know, a model that you built in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything.
You can't get all 3Ds.
So you can create, I know we talked about the car brochure.
Yeah.
And that was a cutting edge 3D model. And the car had reflective properties and a lot of high end stuff. But you could produce a reasonable approximation of that now with a phone, and it might not reflect, it might not have the properties of a real physical object, but it will look like maybe almost a toy approximation of what that 3D object is, mm-hmm. which is good enough for many applications, I would imagine. But the high end, and this is something like a HoloLens, which a HoloLens is a Microsoft mixed reality headset. And so they're putting a transparent lens over the front of your eyes, okay?
And so, I'm sorry, Ty, when you say mixed reality, can you clarify what you mean by that?
Sure. I'll try my best. I'm a little nervous talking about I'm on a big podcast. Sorry.
This is pretty epic.
It's a transparent layer of glass or plastic over your face. And what they're doing is they are drawing. It's a screen. And they're able to draw as a separate image in each individual eye. So you're seeing 3D objects in front of you that aren't there in three dimensions. It's
okay,
basically
so you're looking through it,
light
at the
world. So when Betty's describing augmented reality, you're looking at a pretend object through the lens of your phone. So you're basically looking through, your phone is acting as a window to this augmented reality where there's an object in front of you that doesn't exist. But as you rotate your phone around this object, you can see it in different angles and so on, right?
Yep.
Imagine that same thing, but it's sort of that combined with what you've seen with VR. So that depth perception, that 3D of VR that you've experienced, but you're in the real world because you're looking right through the VR headset instead of being blocked out from reality from it. So it's mixing the 3D graphics of VR in the real world that you're existing in. You can see everyone around you can see the environment you're in, and they could do what Betty described in terms of a marker that will produce above it, or it'll use the marker as a frame of reference to draw the 3D object in the room. Or because this cutting edge stuff, and I'm talking about a $3,500 headset, but this is, you know, tomorrow's cheap technologies. Today's expensive technology, right? Yeah. It knows where you are in the room at all times because the headset itself, looking out into the world, has its own depth perception and interpretation of what's around you. And it places objects in the room based on that. It knows if there's a desk in front of you that's obstructing, you know, and it's not going to draw something in the desk because it knows there's a desk there. Hmm. So, and in the context of training, you know, what Microsoft will show you today, if you want to look at that, is they'll show a room full of people with these headsets on. The headsets are all aware of other people in the room with headsets. And there's a real object in the middle of the room, let's say a V8 engine or something like that. And then you have a piece of that engine in your hand. And the VR, the mixed reality headset knows what you have in your hand. It knows what's in front of you. And it will show you a virtual 3D version of the piece in your hand, just flying in, cruising into the spot in the V8 engine where it goes. And you're watching it almost by magic. It's just floating into that spot. And you've got the same thing in your hand. And you just now know exactly where that goes and how it gets in there. And that's not how it would be used practically, because obviously it's just as easy to show you somebody, but it gives you an idea of the power of that tool.
Well, so I think that shows us the ability, it's where's the practicality? Where are we going to use that? Cause that really is the question, you know?
I think my limited scope of imagination, I only see it used in trying to train sort of, for that level, I only see it. I'm trying to train you how to complete a task that's complicated. And it doesn't require, let's say you want to rebuild a V8 engine and somebody writes a program for that. It doesn't require somebody be in the room with you for 4 hours while they explain how that's done. And you can fast forward and rewind it at your pace. It's basically, it's not like watching a video. You can write software that will let you learn how to do that with just you in a room by yourself, nothing else except for this program and this headset. And you can learn how to build a V8 engine in a more without having to watch it on YouTube where you can't quite see what he's doing there and there's no camera in that little hole. You can actually peer into that little hole and it can show you in the hole.
Yeah,
what's going on in there, and at a very fine detail level, and so you kind of have to think about what the limitations of training somebody to do fine work or something like that type of task is remotely.
Yeah,
and then I think you kind of see what the power of this would be, because you could train. I believe you could train somebody to do anything practical, like physical, with this technology. From any distance by using this. And these are jobs that I think people need to learn practically by doing. And typically that requires somebody be showing you how to do it first, right?
And I think, go ahead, Betty.
I was just going to say, I agree with what you're saying, because a lot of times right now the talk around mixed reality, virtual reality is that, you know, people say it's only good for emergency type of training where you're training somebody where they, you know, they would otherwise be in harm's way. You know, it is good for that, but it is also good for things like what you're describing, rebuilding an engine, learning how to use a $250,000 construction machine that would otherwise
they might not want it in front of you, right?
Right, exactly.
But the virtualized version of it, they're happy to be in front
of
them.
But here's where the issue is right now. So VR, MR, mixed reality, Dan, is still like, it's still super expensive to produce. Mm-hmm. It's expensive. The headsets are going down, which is great, but to actually create it, it's expensive to either hire somebody with the right skill set to create an experience like what Ty was explaining. If you hired one developer to create that experience, it would take them no less than a year to actually create it. Probably more, depending on their level of expertise. So there's that whole piece of you got to have that skill set. Okay, so then we'll buy it from a vendor. Then it's super expensive, like ridiculous pricing. So the way that that area is going, VR, MR, is a lot of companies are jumping on the bandwagon and starting to create off-the-shelf libraries. So they're finding, you know, industries that have, you know, some of the same type of training needs, and create, giving someone a discount to help them create a template or create, you know, a basic training. And then when somebody else comes along, they can sell them this off the shelf with minor configuration or customization, so that that company can actually afford to have VR. And so that's kind of the place we're in right now. I think that the hardware will continue to get cheaper, and I think that eventually the cost will go down some, but here's the, to get it created. But the problem is that skill set is not cheap.
No.
That skill set, not just coding either. There's many different pieces to that.
It's very powerful from the standpoint of, if you put that on someone's head, and they don't even have to put, I mean, the one I was speaking of, they don't even put controllers in your hands or any type of tool, which is kind of the most common thing used now. They're just looking at your hands and responding to the movement of your hands. It's the most intuitive thing. It's the most intuitive new technology I believe I've ever used.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why it's powerful as a training device in the future, perhaps more so, because it doesn't require any training on how to use the training device itself. It's if they do it, you know, if it's done right, and I think there's a lot of money to be made for the people that make the Squarespace of mixed reality experiences, which is coming.
Yes.
And I think that type of developer, who will be maybe the amateur developer, will be using the mixed reality hardware itself to create the experience that the person using it later is experiencing. That's kind of where I see it going. And I think that's sort of where I think I see it going that way, because I think that's where they want me to see it going. But I mean, we've all used a version of this, and I think we can all sort of see that
it's power
of of intuitive use. I mean, it blew me away. Dan Hurt, a guy that let's face it, terrible at video games. I've played
cards on the table.
Yeah, I mean, you know, somebody who that wasn't a strength of yours. You're not too into that kind of stuff. You kind of do it casually, right?
Yeah.
But then you pick this up, and it is a video game, but it's just a video game in a new way. And we're instantly very good at it. That is a powerful moment and I know it's a video game, but you can apply that to anything, because it's using the same tools, just in a different environment, in a different way. The power of that in your worlds of training, development, that kind of thing, I can see that being massively industry changing for you.
One last note, and then I'll let you talk, Dan. Maybe.
Maybe.
So the other thing too is these companies that Ty's describing, that you know, that the car one and how to build an engine and stuff like that. So I've talked, you know, I'm not trying to give you all the negatives. I'm just trying to give you the realisms, right? So the realism is that the person that paid for that, the company, the side of the business that paid for that is not the training department. Even though it is training them, that money came from the business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way it came from the training department. It came from the business. It came from some, you know, department of innovation. It is training. It is teaching people how to do their job, but it came from outer space. It came from someplace else. That money didn't come from the L&D department. And I know it's a generalization, and I'm speaking very definitively with it, but, you know, change my mind, basically. I just don't think.
Well, I think that I think there's today, if somebody with that kind of a budget, is the first thing they're going to think of is if they could do the rebuild engine use case, for example, with an augmented reality, but it's maybe diagrams overlaid, like the Google Glass, how that stuff worked at the very beginning.
It's a progression.
Right. And that, but which is still excellent. I mean, because you're still focused on your task and off in your peripheral vision is some vital information on what to do. It's not as pretty. It's not as beautiful as what I was describing. Right. But it's still extremely useful and it's still intuitive potentially. But then I think there will be tools for people like us to sort of bring some of the magic of the crazy use case into that for with relative ease. I think that's coming quickly. It's not going to be, you know, so insane as having a full 3D model of an engine, but it will be. Oh, look, there's a video of this, and it was triggered by something I looked at, or there's a 3D model of a part in front of me that I'm looking for that I need next. So it's much easier for me to find it in this table of parts because I'm looking at a 3D model representation of it instead of a photo of it. That type of thing is going to come sooner rather than later. And if they make the software, and that's why I keep going to Squarespace, is because you couldn't write a website that looked beautiful with just HTML if you were an amateur, you know, 15 years ago. Yeah. And now anybody can go on and make a gorgeous website that would have blown anyone away not that long ago with relative ease because it's almost like a wizard tool. And there will be the mixed reality, augmented reality version of that because I don't think this technology is going anywhere. It will only be developed. It's too good. It's too intuitive. It's too... that magic is going to last for a lot of people who get into it. I mean, forever. So I think it's here to stay. And I think that the tools will come that make it easy to impress people. And you know, 20 years from now, who knows what we'll see.
Well, we are. Don't let it be said that Mosby is not on the cutting edge of all things, including AR and MR and the VRs and all those things. All right, kids. I think great question. Great question. Venereal something. So we are very close to the end here. Just a couple of things. Unless Betty, tell you what, Betty. Last word about AR. Over to you.
Don't be afraid of AR. Get out there, experience it, and find a way that you can somehow prototype it in your organization.
That's I love so it. Positive. I love that.
Nature will find a way.
You done messed up, Aaron.
Okay. So just a couple more, you might have noticed there's a bit of a gap in our release schedule there. And, we were on a bit of a suspension from our friends in the West Coast. And we did receive a note from them, a Portland's corrections note. And those that aren't familiar with Portland, Betty, I don't know if are you familiar with the Portland office?
No.
No, I'm surprised because you have a podcast. I'm surprised you haven't heard of this. It's the corrections office that if you put your toe over the line in the wrong way, they
run a tight ship over there, Benny.
Well,
yeah,
that's it. Stay on the right side of history. So anyways, I got a new note and I'll read it as it is here. It says, hi, Daniel. I'm still new. And as you remember, we had a corrections officer previously. He's no longer, he had a mishap anyhow and he's gone. So anyways, hi, Daniel. I'm still new and I don't want to rock the boat too much around here. But in episode 24, that was a couple episodes ago, I felt compelled to mention a number of times your co-host tried to pull together and then inextricably link the behavior of both the rude and the disabled. I'm sure I don't need to point out that not every person with a disability is a jerk. Going forward, I'd suggest, and this wasn't me. I just want to be clear on this. This wasn't me, and I don't want to bring up specifically who it was, but it was a situation. Betty, do you remember there was a viral video about a guy punching the back of a chair on a plane because the person in front of him reclined.
Yeah.
That was the story we were talking about when we were kind of we were wondering what the situation.
You guys were sort of playing disability or jerk.
That is not what we were doing.
Sounds like that's what you were doing.
No, we were playing. We were playing Can Train and Fix It, and actually, we had a Can Train and Fix It for today, but we had plenty to talk about, so we didn't talk about that. All right, so going forward, I'd suggest. Here's what Rowan continues to write here. Going forward, I'd suggest to use. I would suggest the use of what I like to call the banana model. It's simple. Every banana is a piece of fruit, but not every piece of fruit is a banana. That's simple, I guess. I've learned and effectively used this tool since grade 3 to prevent these types of mistakes, and it is still every bit as effective today as when as it was then. I'm aware the co-host in question is an accredited educator. Well, so we kind of took the cards to that. So I'm sure this was just a mistake. All the same, I appreciate you serving your podcast suspension without protest. I would tell you it takes a real man to admit when he failed, but I hope you would immediately see why saying something like that would be wrong, and I'd expect you to immediately reprimand me for it. Just a bit of news.
So the correction. Suspended.
Yeah, well, that's why we weren't. Yeah,
you didn't make that clear at the beginning. Okay,
I mentioned it at the top of the podcast. I don't like. I mean, of course, I don't want to talk about having a podcast suspended. That's no fun.
No, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I bet you are. Just a bit of news. The corrections office employees have been asked to work from home, which has us all in a bit of a tizzy. We are an essential service and need to operate at our full capacity. But I wanted to assure you I'll be doing my best to continue listening and correcting. Stay quarantined. Signed, Rowan. Well, there you go. I'm sure he can listen to the episode, maybe take some tips about what to do if he's got children, or maybe he's just got a handful of pets or something. I don't know.
So no Portland notes for Betty, eh? That it's never happened to you before?
No.
You must practice the banana model.
You must.
So many.
You have to have a note about that in your book. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for us. Ty, if you wanted someone, did you want anybody to get a hold of you? Do you want to give out any sort of social information?
Yeah, you can light a flare on County Road 44. you can reach me at roberts.ty@gmail.com.
Wow, giving out your email address. I don't even
Who cares? All right. If I have to get a new one, big deal.
There you go. Just let it burn. Let it burn. Now, Betty, you are, of course, the host of If You Ask Betty podcast, and you've been Betty for a number of years, I think. Where can people get a hold of you?
Did you just ask me how old I was again?
Well, you keep avoiding the question.
I'm none yet. That's how old I am. People can find me LinkedIn. I'm Betty Danowitz, spelled pretty close to how it sounds. And then just about everywhere else, my handle is If You Ask Betty, all one word, all lowercase. You can also find me around my website, www.ifyouaskbetty.com. Try to keep it simple.
There you go. Yeah. And that is all one word. So if you're looking for the podcast, it's all one word, If You Ask Betty.
Yep.
All right. If you're looking for me, LinkedIn, you can find me Dan, H-I-R-T. That's the German spelling. Instagram, Dan Talks Training. And Twitter, I'm at Dan Talks L-N-D. Show notes can be found at mosby.ca/026. You can always email us any corrections, notice of your own, mosbylunin@gmail.com. And I do appreciate the work of Kevin MacLeod, who has composed all the music you hear, and you can get songs like this at incompetech.com. And I just love these songs. It's such a weird song, but I love it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You and I were just talking a week ago privately about my looking into and you.
What's the first word?
It was
okay. And and you probably shouldn't use those two words together in the same sentence.
Well, everyone's seen Blade Runner, right?
I think there's a line that we could draw between and
is damp okay?